It is important to note that it may or may not cause a problem. It could be absolutely nothing. And many of them resolve themselves as time goes on. I'll talk about that in a moment. But if this is, if you're having any kind of bleeding or anything like that, this is kind of what we're talking about in the way of subchorionic hemorrhage. So when that happens and you have that vaginal bleed, and it says that according to the research that we've done, it says it accounts for about 11% of all vaginal bleeding. So if you're having some kind of bleeding, this absolutely could be a reason for that. Then you would go into your provider, and this might be one of the things that they're talking to you about. Getting pregnant and giving birth are two of the most exciting things you can ever hope to experience in this life. The moment you think you could be pregnant, you're frantically searching for all the best information, which is why you're here today. I'm Stephanie King, and with my many years of experience as a professional childbirth educator, doula, and lover of all things pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, I'm here to make preparing for your birth enjoyable, empowering, and totally easy. Each week, I'll cover different topics, interview professionals, and get into the nitty-gritty birth stories from mamas just like you. And when you're ready for more, you can join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I take you step by step through exactly how to prepare your mind, body, spirit, and partner for a birth you love. So let's get started. Welcome to this week's podcast episode, everyone. And for those who are new here, or maybe you've been around for a while and you haven't had a chance to do this yet, I'm going to ask you to do two things. First of all, if you have not left a review and you have Apple Podcasts, I know some of you leave them on Spotify, and that is excellent too. I'm going to give instructions for Apple Podcasts. Pull it up on your app wherever you are. Scroll down to the bottom of where you are listening to this episode. There should be a place that says write a review. Click those stars, write me a review, and then I get to read it hopefully soon, your review on the podcast. So it's really exciting for me. It helps me to kind of gauge where I'm at with my audience, to know that I'm speaking the right things to you guys. And if you feel like this information is going to be helpful, not only for yourself, but for somebody else, will you please, please, please do that? It helps us to get a little higher up for those searches so that women find this podcast and they get really good information for themselves during pregnancy. The second thing I want you to do, if you have not downloaded our exercise guide, like I said, this is not squats. This is not, well, actually there is squatting, but it's not like the exercise squats that you're thinking of. This is not kind of like any exercise program. These are three main, simple, easy, totally doable exercises that you can do every single day, starting at any time during your pregnancy and continuing on until you give birth, and even after if you want, that will help your baby be in a good position and your body to be prepared and comfortable stretching and strengthening all the right things. So if you haven't signed up for that yet, and we always have the link in the show notes, but it's myessentialbirth.com, and you can click free cheat sheet. You can put your name and information on that main page, or myessentialbirth.com/3-exercises. So if you have not done that yet, those are the two things that I would love for you to do. And with that, let's go into this week's testimonial, because like I said, I absolutely love getting to read them right here on the podcast. This one comes from Maggie MC 1217. She says, the best. Thank you, Maggie. I can just stop right there, but she has a little more. She said, so much great info. I truly can't stop listening. I was quite nervous about birth before, but honestly cannot wait. Thank you for all the great content and your advocacy for a natural birth. You are so welcome, and thanks for joining me here. That right there is my goal. If you are listening and you have any kind of fear regarding birth, if you're uncertain about anything, if you have questions about things and you don't know where to start, you're in the right place. Stick with me. I take you step by step, making pregnancy and birth topics totally a breeze so that you completely understand what is coming up for you during your pregnancy, what your options are, and how to speak to your provider about it. And we always include studies and references in case you're curious as to where we get our detailed evidence-based information, because everything that we talk about on here, there is evidence to support what we talk about for sure. Also, I talk about personal experiences, whether that's professional or my own, and that does play a part into how we present information, and you'll also see that throughout the birth course. So again, if you're interested in any of that or joining the birth course, myessentialbirth.com/get-started, or just head to myessentialbirth.com. We also have a postpartum course now. You can dive into that as well. this episode actually came from, it's kind of a, not a spinoff, but it really is a part two of something I talked about back in August of 2023. So not too terribly long ago, but it's been a minute. We talked about subchorionic hemorrhage. And this is a topic that came up because we were starting to get a couple questions here and there from moms who were experiencing this. And so we wanted to make sure and touch on that topic. So these are extra questions, more feedback that we got when we put that first episode out. So this is great, especially for moms who are, you haven't given birth yet, and this is something that you're dealing with, or if you are pregnant and have and may come up to this. So for moms who already gave birth, that's actually where some of these questions came from. They're like, oh, I realized I had this question or I had this question. And that's really awesome. So this is going to benefit everybody. Obviously, we are going to link in the show notes that first part one, kind of subchorionic hemorrhage and what we talked about. This is the follow-up. So really quick, because if you didn't listen to that episode and you have no idea what I'm talking about, I'm going to tell you what a subchorionic hemorrhage is, but then I'm going to refer you back to that episode so that I can dive into the new questions and information. And guys, this isn't going to be a long episode because it really is just a follow-up. So again, this is a product of everybody reaching out after we put an episode out, asking us questions, and now we get to talk back. So if you have more questions after this episode, or you listen to any episode and you're like, I need clarification, or I have this specific situation, can you talk about this? This is really on my mind. Send us those things because we listen and then we make outlines for them and hopefully get to answer your questions just right back at you. So what is a subchorionic hemorrhage? Sometimes this can be called a subchorionic hematoma or a subchorionic bleed, but it comes from where the placenta detaches from the original implantation site during pregnancy. So wherever that placenta attached in the beginning, for some reason, it moved away from that area. And what happens is blood can collect. So it's the blood collects between the outer layer of your bag of waters. It's called the chorion layer. And that's why it's the subchorionic hemorrhage. So it sits between your uterus and that outer layer of your bag of waters. So your baby's inside of the bag of waters. You have the bag of waters. The part that is close to the baby inside of that bag of waters, that's called the amnion. And then the outside is called the chorion. That's why you've got your amniotic fluid and your subchorionic hemorrhage, right? So that outer layer of that bag of waters sits against your uterus. And when it peels back a little bit like that, and we're talking about the placenta as well, when that peels back a little bit, we've got this blood that collects between those two layers. So the outer layer of the bag of waters and your uterus. And that blood collecting obviously can be a little bit scary because as time goes on, mom can start bleeding, and that's where she can have that trickle of blood, or, you know, very bright blood, a heavier bleed, a lighter bleed, bright red spotting, something that tells you this is not normal for this pregnancy. Now, it is important to note that it may or may not cause a problem. It could be absolutely nothing. And many of them resolve themselves as time goes on. I'll talk about that in a moment. But if this is, if you're having any kind of bleeding or anything like that, this is kind of what we're talking about in the way of subchorionic hemorrhage. So when that happens and you have that vaginal bleed, and it says that according to the research that we've done, it says it accounts for about 11% of all vaginal bleeding. So if you're having some kind of bleeding, this absolutely could be a reason for that. Then you would go into your provider, and this might be one of the things that they're talking to you about. So our last episode went over like all the symptoms that you need to know about, any causes and risk factors that were associated with it. We talked about when you're going to call your provider, how it's going to affect your baby and your pregnancy, what you can do once you have it. And we talk about if it makes the pregnancy high risk, as well as how it affects the birth plan. So if you're looking for all of that information, all of that is going to be in the previous episode. For today, this episode is going to cover a couple of different topics or questions. So the first question we got was, can you prevent it from happening, or can you heal it any faster? Is there anything that you can do to slow down the development or help it to heal? And from what we found, unfortunately, no, there's not much that you can do. And so it's really about listening to your body and working with your provider and trusting the process. which I know when things are out of our hands and it's a little out of control like that is not very comfortable, but that unfortunately is kind of where you're at with this. There are risk factors that cause you to be more likely to develop one. We talked about that in the last episode as well. But some of these are out of your control, right? All of them are out of your control. And it's things like if you have a malformed uterus, a different shape of your uterus, right? Or recurrent pregnancy loss or pelvic infections. I think we went over IVF and some other things that can cause that to be a little bit higher on the are you going to develop this or not? But those are some things to keep in mind. It's nothing that you did or didn't do. It just kind of is part of what can happen during pregnancy, even though it's not fun. So keep that in mind. Nothing that you did wrong, nothing that you can do to prevent or make it, well, maybe you could make it worse. And I'll talk about that in a moment. But there's nothing that you did to cause or create this. When it comes to resolving it faster, your provider might recommend something like pelvic rest. So maybe they're talking bed rest or just the movements that you're doing, lowering some of those movements, lowering how long you're doing some of those movements, that kind of thing. So that would be something you work side by side with your provider on. Again, it's not a perfect science, so they'll have ideas for you, but it might not be perfect. This pelvic rest is going to depend on the size of the hematoma and if you have any bleeding, because sometimes they can do an ultrasound and that's how they catch it and you would have no idea. So it's typically caught between weeks 10 to 20. You can have bleeding and that's how it's caught, or it can be on one of those ultrasounds and that's how they see it. So you never know. It can be part of the bleeding can be part of your story when you have one, or it might not. And I know that's probably not the answer that most of you want to hear if you have questions about that, but that is the reality of it. I'd say try not to stress too much. Listen to that good provider that you have vetted and you are on the same page with and you trust, and then know that most of them actually do resolve on their own. So that's very encouraging. And most of them resolve by about 20 weeks. But again, I'll get into that a little bit more in a moment. Another question that we got, and super common, obvious question, right? Can I still exercise? And the answer is you need to go back to that provider and make sure that you're following their recommendations. Again, depending on how big it is, where it's located, what effects you're having, that's all going to play a part. And so it's going to be really dependent on your situation. So keep that in mind as well. But most are going to say, don't be doing a lot of vigorous exercising, obviously. So things like walking and stuff are probably fine. But again, you work with your provider, but usually fine. And as far as our three exercises, because I know I talked about that at the beginning of the episode, these are some pelvic tilts, a squat, and a forward leaning inversion. Make sure you bring that up with your provider. It will have to do with your specific situation. Something like a forward leaning inversion, they might be fine with, and they might say that's absolute no-go. Pelvic tilts are probably safe, but I am not in a position to medically tell you that they are. So again, work with your provider. And then same with the squat, depending on where that hematoma is, you don't want to be putting extra pressure in places it doesn't belong. And so just work with your provider on those things and listen to your body. You are extremely intuitive. You are more in tune than you realize. And so if something, even if you've been told it is okay, it might not be. And so you listen to your body and trust the process, just like we tell you to do pregnancy, labor, postpartum, right? So that's my take on that. Now, when will it go away? I told you most of them are going to resolve on their own about 20 weeks, which is awesome. And that's probably when you're going to have that ultrasound, should you choose to have one that's talking about the gender and things. So maybe they schedule that out for week 22, 24, something like that. But it does vary widely. Unfortunately, I can't say all of them are going to be gone by this time. Obviously, that's not going to be the case. Many of them will, but they can also hang around till birth. And just because they hang around doesn't mean it's going to affect you or your baby in any kind of negative way, other than knowing that it's there and being a little bit more cautious. So keep that in mind as well. Now, does it affect baby's position? That was another question that we got. And the answer is no, it shouldn't. I mean, unless you have a massive hematoma, and then we've got, I mean, that's something you definitely work with a provider about. But no, it where it's at and what it's doing should not affect what your baby is doing in the way of their position at all. So I would say if you are listening here and you are early on in your pregnancy, the best thing that you can do is those three exercises, including that forward leaning inversion, prior to hearing about if you have something like this or if you experience any kind of bleed. That way your baby, hopefully, is working on being in that good position anyways. So that is something that you can do to help in the event that you do run across this. I think the good thing about subchorionic hemorrhage or hematoma is that the majority of time, there's no effects to baby. So that can be really positive. Kind of store that away and remind yourself this doesn't have to be some crazy, terrible thing. It's just a variation of normal during pregnancy. Remember, though, that as your baby and your uterus grows, that's when you may or may not experience some bleeding. So if you know you have one, then that will happen or could happen as baby gets bigger. Another one that we've heard is, my doctor says I will need a cesarean birth if I still have it when I go into labor. Now, let's take a moment with this one. If this is what you are hearing, this is time to reach out to another provider. Get a second and third opinion, meet with providers at different hospitals in different settings, and ask lots of questions, because this is not necessarily evidence-based. In fact, research shows that subchorionic hemorrhage that's diagnosed in early pregnancy does not influence the need for a cesarean at all. Obviously, piece by piece, case by case, but keep that in mind, because that information is going to be really useful to you if you're up against a provider that is pushing this for one reason or another. Now, they might be uncomfortable for whatever their reasons are. It's definitely worth the conversation and asking lots of questions. But I would love to see the evidence on, do you have some evidence showing that it's actually better for me to have a cesarean birth than not? Do you have something in black and white, like a study I can look at, or like where you're getting your information, so that I can read over it and feel a little more comfortable answering this question? If it's something that they're very concerned about for your situation, they should absolutely have something that they can hand you that tells you, yes, this is why. And if not, or if they get a little squirmy when you ask that question, that could be a red flag. Having a persistent hemorrhage that sticks around can lead to things like high blood pressure, the premature rupture of membranes. And so here's where we get into we don't necessarily need to plan for, schedule, induce, and have a cesarean birth. But if you get something like high blood pressure and you have a premature rupture of membranes, meaning your water breaks before you're having any contractions, then your body might need some help to get things going. And so that does kind of push you into that induction phase where they're doing Pitocin, where they're trying to get your cervix to shorten and open and ripen. And if they need to do all of that and your body is just not ready to be in labor yet, you know, all of that intervention to try and medically get things moving, then that can lead to a cesarean birth. And so there is this side things of, there is a possibility that you could experience some of these things and it will lead to a cesarean birth, but it does not mean that you immediately need to schedule a cesarean birth. So have that conversation with your provider, because I'm speaking in generalities and I'm talking specific to subchorionic hemorrhage. And if you have other things that are going on and you have this, obviously that is a different place to be. And I'm not a medical provider, so I can't answer your specific situation, but it's definitely worth a conversation with your provider to ask those questions, get the research, and then make a decision from there. When your water breaks, if it does prematurely or when it's time to have your baby, you'll probably or possibly, but likely will notice some blood because that hematoma gets pushed out. So like imagine your water breaks, right? And the water, the bag of waters is full with water and it's pushed up against the uterus. And that bleed is in between that bag of waters and uterus, like we talked about at the beginning. And then that bag of waters gets popped. However, it gets popped and it shrinks down around your baby. And so obviously that bleed would probably drop down and come out. So that is likely what you are to experience. And so if that happens and you have a hematoma, and they might have different recommendations for you as to when you go in, don't freak out when you see it. Just know whatever you've worked out with your provider that, like, yes, as soon as your water breaks, you need to come in immediately, or they say it should be fine. Let's check a couple of things at home, you know, let us know what your contractions are doing. Maybe you have a way to monitor the baby's heart rate and you can tell them what your contraction, you know, all that kind of stuff. Then you guys have that conversation beforehand. So Like I said, this was kind of going to be a short and sweet episode, just a follow-up with some personal questions that you guys sent in on Instagram and our email. With that, if you have any more questions, or as I said before, if you have topics that you want covered, you email at us at hello@myessentialbirth.com or reach out on Instagram at myessentialbirth. So I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and I will see you here next week. If you loved what you heard today, the very best way to support this podcast and help other moms to find it is to leave a quick review. I read one at the beginning of the episodes, and I would love for yours to be next. And if you're ready for even more pregnancy, birth, and postpartum goodness, come join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I will hold your hand and walk you through pregnancy and birth step by step so you're totally prepared for a birth you'll love. See you next week.